This issue of evolution versus creation, if you like, remains a very hotly debated subject with all kinds of political and cultural overtones, doesn't it? In your view, is there anything about evolutionary biology with which Catholics, Christians should have a problem?
No. The problem comes with a kind of evolutionism, as they say in Italian, evolutionismo, with a kind of evolutionism in which evolutionary biology is used as the basis for broad philosophical and cultural claims which contend, for example, that human beings are nothing other than the process of biological change, that the natural sciences in general and biology in particular tell us all there needs to be known about what it means to be a human being. Such claims which tell us that the natural sciences and in particular biology tell us everything about what it means to be human, those are philosophical and to some extent theological, but especially philosophical claims and not themselves claims justified by the developments in evolutionary biology. So the dilemma comes from a kind of what I would call totalizing naturalism, in which the natural sciences tell us everything that needs to be known about nature, about human nature, and so forth. And the problem then of some conflict with traditional philosophy and theology with respect to human nature, with respect to creation, the problem comes when one has an unjustified philosophical judgment about the nature and extent of evolutionary biology.
This debate, though, has divided scientists and theologians for centuries, hasn't it? Even before Darwin and the developments of the 17th century. Do you see many parallels between reactions in medieval Christianity, the medieval church, to Aristotle's science and contemporary reactions to Darwin and more modern theories of evolution?
Well, in the Middle Ages, especially in medieval Islam, and to some degree Judaism and Christianity as well, there were a number of theologians and philosophers in each of the traditions who felt threatened by any number of conclusions based upon the advanced science of the day, which was an Aristotelian science, in particular concerning the eternity of the world. And that's but one example. And the concern was, gee, if what do we do in the face of scientific claims that the world is eternal in the light of Christian belief or Muslim belief or Jewish belief that the world has a temporal beginning? So for some, the solution to this apparent conflict was to reject or to ban the teaching of Aristotelian science. This was attempted already in the 13th century in the Latin West at different universities. But it was the genius of thinkers such as Albert the Great, St. Bonaventure, and in particular of Thomas Aquinas, to show that Aristotelian science need not be construed as a threat to traditional Christian belief, especially with respect to the notion of creation. And Thomas helped us to see that the natural sciences, in his case Aristotelian science, offers explanation of processes which occur in nature, whereas creation is an account of why there is anything at all. In other words, creation is an account of the existence of things, whereas the natural sciences offer explanations about changes in and among existing things, even if those changes involve long processes, and for Thomas, even if the world were eternal. Because although Thomas believed that the world had a temporal beginning, he thought that an eternal universe, if the universe were eternal, an eternal universe would still be a created universe. So in many ways, the manner in which thinkers such as Thomas Aquinas wrestled with the implications of Aristotelian science for belief in creation, for example, can continue to serve as a useful way to look at claims about nature and human nature based on developments in the biological sciences. In particular, with respect to creation, Thomas helps us to see that creation isn't some distant event. It is rather the ongoing, complete causing of all that is. And whatever kind of universe we have, even if the universe were eternal or an evolving universe or whatever, the kind of universe we have is a different question from the fact that whatever kind of universe there is, God is the creative cause of that universe. So the dilemma that Thomas helps us to resolve is to think that creation must mean some particular literalistic reading of Scripture, or it must mean God's acting over against natural processes and the like, and that therefore there would be some kind of conflict between accepting the tenets of evolutionary biology and the tenets of the doctrine of creation. Thomas says that what's crucial to reading Genesis is the fact of creation, not the manner or mode of formation of the world. And the natural sciences talk about the manner or mode of formation of the world, not whether or not the world is created.
But if Thomas and others are offering these insights, these solutions, as you call them, so many centuries ago, why is it that some scientists and indeed some theologians today continue to see it as either or?
Well, what has happened, especially in the 19th and 20th centuries, especially after Darwin, but already to some extent before, is that evolution and creation, broadly construed, have taken on sort of cultural connotations. They become ideological markers for competing worldviews. And the conflict really exists between competing worldviews, which have their roots in particular scientific or particular philosophical conceptions, and it's those competing worldviews which are in conflict. But once one begins to unpack the arguments behind these competing worldviews and allows the natural sciences to say, well, what is the nature and what are the limits of natural scientific explanation, then one can begin to reduce, if not indeed eliminate, some of these apparent conflicts. In a world in which science has taken on the sort of preeminent authority or marker for truth, it becomes easy to make the mistake to think that the natural sciences explain all that needs to be explained. And as I suggested before, that claim that the natural sciences explain all that needs to be explained leads some on the part of, in the name of natural science, to reject theological and philosophical notions of creation, and it leads some on the other side, in order to defend traditional beliefs in creation, to think that one must reject the conclusions of the natural sciences. But that conflict, as I said, is in part the result of a kind of misunderstanding of the nature and extent of scientific inquiry, what Pope Benedict XVI calls the narrowing of reason simply to the realm of the natural sciences, and hence the narrowing of explanations only to the realm of the natural sciences. Another reason for the failure to take seriously judgments of people like Thomas Aquinas on this matter is the sort of master narrative of modernity, which sees the modern world being born as in part a rejection of the thought of Thomas and Aristotle. And how do we know that? Because the scientific revolution of the 17th century has shown us that that philosophy and science of Thomas and of Aristotle is false, because modern science is true, etc. So the only reason to look to Thomas Aquinas at all would be for sort of archaeological purposes, to examine the fossils of an extinct intellectual species. But if we begin to think again about the relationship between traditional science and contemporary science, we might be able to see ways to reappropriate, as the French say, ressourcement, to reappropriate the thought of Thomas Aquinas, because he helps us to make these crucial distinctions between creation and the natural sciences. As he often said, creatio non est mutatio. Creation isn't a change. And creation is right now. Creation is the complete ongoing causing of whatever is. Creation is a kind of vertical dimension in the affairs of the world, whereas the natural sciences explain all the changes on a kind of in a kind of horizontal plane. This was an image, indeed, which I think Pope Benedict XVI has made on several occasions, that the natural sciences and the human sciences in general concern the horizontal level of existence, whereas creation is that vertical dimension which, in a way, makes the horizontal possible.
And finally, do you see a growing acceptance of this position, of this way in which creation and evolutionary biology can go hand in hand, or are you concerned about a hardening of positions against this view?
Well, it is always sort of more exciting for popular press and even for popular writers, including scientists, to embrace some sort of fundamental conflict between science and religion, between evolution and creation. That sort of mythology persists because it serves valuable ideological roles. In other words, as one argues in questions of bioethics or all sorts of stem cell research, whatever, all those sorts of contemporary hot-button issues, it becomes easy to use as an ideological club in debate the notion of a fundamental conflict, of a fundamental hostility. So there is, since the view of a conflict continues to serve a number of important political and social purposes, it becomes difficult to dislodge that notion of a conflict from public consciousness.